Hello, FCS Nation. It's time for your show. I'm your host, Kevin Marshall. I'm coming to you this week from the lovely Bitterroot Valley of Montana. Joining me like he does each week is the co-host of this program, Mr. Stone Labanowitz, the quarterback of the program. He's coming to you from the Sunshine State of Florida. Well, Stone, the first round of the playoffs is in the books, and there were people who complained that maybe 24 teams was too many, that we weren't going to see a lot of good games this week. Well, you know what? I think we did. I was entertained by almost all of these ball games. I was enraged by one in particular, but you can say what you want to about the first round. It was entertaining.
There were upsets that we were not used to seeing, so exciting nonetheless, and there are some interesting stats and things that happen in these games that we're going to get into.
In the first game, we'll recap from last week, Lehigh 20, number 9, Richmond 16. What I take away from this one, Stone, is that bye week is very important. Richmond had won 10 games in a row. We got to figure they're coming into this thing hotter than fish grease, right? They looked tired, they looked worn down, and they could not put the ball in the end zone. Lehigh played very good defense in the red zone, held Richmond to field goals, and Lehigh beat Richmond. And they get rewarded from that by coming out to Idaho this week to take on the Idaho Vandals. Very disappointing playoffs for Richmond.
Yeah, very, very, very disappointing. And shout out to Kevin Cahill. He had these guys schemed up. They went 1 of 3 on fourth down conversions for Richmond. So just Lehigh executed. You talked about the red zone numbers too. Held them to a touchdown out of, I think, the 3 or 4 trips that they got down there with. So this was a huge, huge win for Lehigh. And you're absolutely spot on, Kev. Richmond was so hot. They'd won 10 games in a row. And I think they finally had a week to themselves to sit and look at what they were actually doing. And it ended up biting them in the behind. And they lost to a team that they had no business losing to.
Number 10 seed Rhode Island 21, Central Connecticut State 17. If you're Rhode Island, you won the game. That's about the best and nicest thing you can say about it. You shouldn't rejoice if you're the number 10 seed in the country, a CAA team, and you beat a NEC team with 40 scholarships by 4 points.
You're absolutely correct, and it's expected that you have a back in the backfield rush for 2 bills on the ground. And I think the thing that stuck out to me is the winning margin here was 4 points. You talked about there's nothing to rejoice about, and you had 3 interceptions and a pick 6, and you only scored 21 points. So this offense, I think, was the story of this game. They have a lot to figure out.
Number 11 seed Villanova 22, Eastern Kentucky 17. This one enraged me. I'm going to talk about this in segment 2, so I just want to kind of gloss over it here, Stone. Horrible call on a scoop and score that was overturned gave Villanova a victory that, quite frankly, they didn't earn on the football field. They'll move on, but this one left a very sour taste in my mouth. The Colonels got robbed.
It left a bad taste in your mouth. It left a bad taste for FCS fans. It left a bad taste in college football fans in general who had eyes on this game. They were robbed and they were jobbed, and we will get into it in depth in the next segment, but just so many opportunities, not only for the Stripes, but even Eastern Kentucky to take advantage of, even after that play happened, that just felt like the game had flipped upside down. It was very confusing, and it's a loss that, sure, when that dust settled, they still didn't feel real. It's awful.
And in the wackiest game of the weekend, number 12 seed Illinois State 35, SEMO 27. Robo arm Paxton DeLaurent threw the ball 85 times, Labanowitz. Now, you were a quarterback who liked to throw the ball. Is 85 times too excessive, bro?
I don't even know what to make of 85 attempts. I really don't. I really don't. And I've watched this game back twice now. Obviously, it was every play. Now, what I think they take into account are drive starters. And it seems like they're most aggressive on first down. So most teams are running the ball on first down. If you throw the ball on first down, you're probably going to automatically see yourself at 35, 40 attempts. But Kevin, 85. This is not 35 or 40. 85. And they managed to make this thing interesting kind of down the stretch. But Paxton's been a turnover machine the second half of the season. And this, again, something that we spoke about. And it caught up to him. And Illinois State walks away with a round one victory. Surprising.
How do you turn the ball over 8 times and only lose by 8 points?
Right,
then?
Right.
I mean, this game was just crazy. I mean, you would think that you would turn that into at least a 30-point win or 21 or 14, not 8. I mean, if you would have got 5 turnovers, would you have lost?
Right,
thing I've ever seen.
Oftentimes we hear coaches preach about turnover margin and how it's one of the most important things in a football game. Yeah, you won the turnover battle, but you won the game by 8 points. You won the game by a possession. So there are positives, and at the same time, negatives with that.
Number 13 seed Tarleton State, 43, Drake, 29. Drake jumped out ahead of this one, Stone, and Tarleton State, they didn't fold up. They battled back against Drake, which is a really weird thing to be saying about a playoff game with a seeded team, right? They had to battle back to catch up to Drake, but they did. They were able to pull away in the end, and their superior talent finally won out. But the Drake team was game. I liked the way they played. The Drake head coach parlayed his success there into getting a new gig at Northern Iowa. Good for him. But Tarleton State, 43, Drake, 29. Number 14 seed Montana, 41, Tennessee State, 27. This game was closer than the score might have led you to believe. And yet again, someone did not learn their lesson, Stone. Don't kick the ball to Junior Bergen, ever. And then when you don't kick the ball to Junior Bergen ever, don't kick it to him again ever again. And so on and so forth to infinity, sir. He was a difference maker in a playoff game in Missoula, just like we saw last year. But Tennessee State, they have some athletes. Draven Ellis, the quarterback, played well. It just seemed like at times, when it really mattered, Tennessee State just couldn't get out of their own way. How many times did they snap the ball over the quarterback's head? At least three. And you're going from second and one to third and 34 after doing that three times. Good effort. Talent is there. Leadership is there for Tennessee State. Just not a good time to play a sloppy game in some aspects.
Yeah, I think the takeaway here is execution. You talked about it. When it mattered most, Montana played good football, and that's what they're known to do. But you're also spot on with saying that this scoreline is not indicative at all of how this game played out. I mean, we're talking late third quarter. You thought Tennessee State had a chance of winning this ball game. And shout out Draylen Ellis, who played his ass off. He is a gamer. He is very, very mobile. I think sneakily probably the best on his legs out of all quarterbacks in the FCS. And of course, Fargo fans right now are like, what are you talking about, Cam Miller? Draylen Ellis does it differently. He's just a little smoother and he's able to kind of get to the sidelines, get horizontal before he gets vertical. And a lot of quarterbacks don't have that gift. Draylen Ellis is good. Eddie George is also a damn good football coach, Kevin. This was cool to see Bobby Houck and Eddie George go at it in Washington Grizzly Stadium. Montana's got problems up ahead with the Jacks because South Dakota State's not going to let you do that to him in the third and fourth quarter, especially in Brookings.
Number 15 seed, Abilene Christian, 24, Northern Arizona, nothing. NAU came in and did absolutely nothing offensively. Nothing. Against Abilene Christian's backup quarterback, right? Not even against their best offensive player because he didn't play. I think it's just a testament and how we were right about how we said that there are teams from these leagues who don't all play each other, who get playoff berths they don't deserve because they avoid the two best teams in their conference. Abilene Christian, I'm not sure how good they are, mostly because Maverick McIver didn't play, right? This is a very good team with him under center. Well, I don't guess they ever go under center, but they're a very good team when he plays quarterback. He's going to be back this week as they go to Fargo. They're a big underdog going into Fargo, but people have said this to me this week. They were 30-point dogs when they went to Texas Tech, and they played really good and lost by a single point. Why can't they do it in Fargo? We'll see. Tennessee Martin, 41, number 16 seed New Hampshire, 10. Insert your hyperbole of getting your ass whooped, whatever you want to say, right here. Tennessee Martin defense was outstanding. They did what we said they were going to be able to do with their front seven, get Seth Morgan off his spot, make him have to be mobile, throw the ball outside the pocket. He wasn't able to do it. He's a pocket guy. And Tennessee Martin just absolutely waylaid and mugged New Hampshire on their own field and beat them 41-10. Again, another team from a league with the paper champion where the good teams don't play each other exposed. It was a theme in the first round of the playoffs, Stone.
We've been very, 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 very high on this UT Martin defense, Kev, you especially, that front seven. And I think when you're trying to find defensive stats where you should start as total yards, and in this matchup, 482 to 124, I mean, that tells you everything you need to know about how they played defensively. And it also gives you what you need to know offensively. That 482 yards was put up here. This is a beatdown. This is a New Hampshire team that knows how to score the football. But what we learned is what we learn each and every year. And there are paper champions from all of these leagues. And it's glaring. 41-10 is smacked down the way of the Skyhawks. This team's also really good, Kev.
It's time for us to take a break. When we come back, Stone and I will discuss some of the things that happened in a couple of these games. Well, really just one in particular, and it will be mostly me and not Stone who's going to be discussing it. A rant is a-coming, y'all. And after that, we'll discuss some of these coaching moves taking place in the coaching carousel in the football championship subdivision. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. I'm Kevin Marshall. He's Stone Labanowitz. Stone, let's talk about what happened in that Villanova versus Eastern Kentucky game last week. I will say this before we start, or I start, however you want to look at it, FCS Nation. This is my opinion and my opinion only. But whoever the replay official was in that football game who overturned that scoop and score for Eastern Kentucky should never be allowed anywhere near a football field in college football ever again. And I mean that. And I mean that more so than anything you've ever heard me say before. There is no way in the world a rational person could look at that video and overturn what was obviously a correct call on the field, which was that was a fumble, and that was a scoop and score for a touchdown for Eastern Kentucky. I got no dog in that fight. I don't root for Villanova. I don't root for Eastern Kentucky. But the one thing I do root for is players who start in the spring, practice all spring, lift weights all spring, all summer, fall camp, getting a playoff win absolutely stolen from them by someone's sheer incompetence. That should never happen for the NCAA FCS playoffs. It has happened once. It must never, ever happen again. That replay official must never be allowed to officiate another game in college football ever again.
Yeah, nothing wrong at all. And you spit a quarter of the venom that Walt Wells did, and every bit of it warranted. And I think I raced to his postgame presser. I've listened back to it multiple times now. What stands out to me is that the white hat never, never came and spoke to him. And in our reaction video that you can find on FCS Nation Radio 1 of Walt Wells, head coach of Eastern Kentucky's reaction, he's caught off guard by it being overturned. He's not expecting it. And if the head coach isn't expecting it, if he's not standing anywhere near the referee, you would think that he knows that that's a scoop and score and that's going to count. So he goes to the opposite side of the field to talk with an assistant coach, and all of a sudden his eyes lit up. Huh? What? Excuse me? And for a call like this to be overturned without speaking to the white hat and without getting an explanation, that alone is criminal, regardless of what you want to say about the replay official or whatever dweeb was up there trying to make this call, or I guess ruining this entire game in a playoff game. Nonetheless, for an Eastern Kentucky team that Walt Wells has spent the past few years turning around, criminal, 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 criminal. These kids won't get over this for a long time. It may haunt them forever. I know we're talking about an FCS round one playoff game, but just the way in which it was lost, and also that last play of the game, to lose it like that, it just poured salt on the wound, and I feel bad for these guys. Criminal.
And I thought, for what happened to him and his football team, that Wells's reaction was quite tame, sir. Right? I mean, he only got one 15-yard penalty, and he didn't make contact with anybody. I didn't think he yelled at the side judge any more than a head coach would just trying to get his attention. And that flag came out quick. After that first one, if I was Eastern Kentucky head coach Walt Wells, I would have said to that fellow who was closest to me, you just go ahead and throw as many damn flags as you want to put that ball on the 1 yard line or the 1 inch line, because I'm going to get my money's worth in this little brouhaha right here. I thought it was a tame reaction to just something that was horrible and should never have happened. And I'm going to say it again, that replay official should be nowhere near anything having to do with college football ever again. Now, I got my dand up now, Stone, and trying not to do that. I'm not in the best shape, right? I mean, I don't want to have a heart attack here discussing what I almost had a heart attack when it happened last Saturday. But here are some coaching news from around the football championship subdivision. Some coaches have been fired or resigned or moved on to pursue other opportunities, whatever that means, right? Since the end of the season, and some new guys have been hired. I think the best job that's out there, there were two of them, Northern Iowa with head coach Mark Farley retiring. Northern Iowa hired Drake, head coach Todd Stepsis, to be their new head coach. He obviously did a lot with very little at Drake, and he's moving into a Northern Iowa program that has lofty expectations every year. We kind of knew what we were going to see from Northern Iowa every year up until the last couple of years when it didn't really work out in their favor. But the Northern Iowa job is a good job, and the Panthers seem to have found their man. At Prairie View A&M, they did not renew the contract of head coach Bubba McDowell. At Valpo, Landon Fox is out. Contract was not renewed. At McNeese, they made a change in leadership, said the athletic director at McNeese, and Gary Goff is out. And who's going to ride back in on his white steed to try to turn the fortunes of McNeese around again? Their old friend, Matt Viator. He was the head coach there before, had a great record in the regular season, didn't do so well in playoff games, but McNeese is a proud program. And I guess, Stone, when you're looking at McNeese, this is kind of them going to the Bobby Houck bullpen. What do you say? Kind of the same thing McNeese did that Montana did. We'll see see if it works out for McNeese. Davidson is also looking for a new head coach. Coach Scott Abel resigned to accept the head coaching position at Rice. Abel was very successful at Davidson, getting them to the FCS playoffs a lot during his tenure. And the challenges at Davidson are kind of similar to the ones at Rice. Very high academics, don't spend a lot of money on the football program, but expect to have results. That's a very good hire for the Rice Owls, I do believe. Dawson Odoms is out at Norfolk State. Reason for that, they say, is a change in leadership. And in something that was surprising, I guess, a little bit, is that Bubba Schweigert stepped down and moved into a senior administrative role at North Dakota. You'll never find anybody that has a bad word to say about Bubba Schweigert personally. Everybody likes that man. They know that he put everything he had every day into making the North Dakota Fighting Hawks a good football team. But you kind of feel like maybe they had reached their ceiling under Coach Bubba Schweigert, and you know, he got promoted. So this is one of those things where a fella's no longer coaching and they like him so much, they're going to have him hang around in a senior administrative role. I think that was the right move for North Dakota in keeping Bubba Schweigert around. And a surprising one to me is that Tim Rebo retired at Nichols. Tim Rebo is one of the favorite guys I've ever had to interview on this program. This was even before Stone came and was a part of it. I always enjoyed having Coach Rebo on. He was very, very generous with his time, and I hope Coach Rebo enjoys his retirement. I know he won't be too far away from a Nichols football game on Saturdays, though. And they hired Tommy Rabacki, who was his defensive coordinator, to be the new head coach. So they're going to keep it in the family, so to speak. Good for Nichols in keeping that Rebo coaching tree going there for the Colonels. At Colgate, Stan Dutoski is out. They wanted a change in leadership. Alabama A&M, this was kind of surprising to me a little bit. Connell Maynor is out at Alabama A&M. The reason for it is he was relieved from his duties. You know, look, it wasn't but a couple of years ago, right, Stan? We were talking about Akil Glass at Alabama A&M and them being a really good team. But they just couldn't get over the hump under Connell Maynor. They have a beautiful stadium. They invest in facilities. They expect to win, and they expect to get to the Celebration Bowl at Alabama A&M, and Connell Maynor just didn't get it done like that there. Butler is looking for a head coach because Mike Yuremovich has accepted the head coaching position at Ball State. Butler, Bulldogs, in the market for a new coach. North Carolina A&T relieved Vincent Brown of his coaching duties. North Carolina A&T, not very much success since moving to the CAA. That's a school that wants to win football games, and I believe they'll make a splash hire here to help them get there. That's a proud program. They want to win, and I believe they will. And Kendrick Wade was fired from Mississippi Valley State. With the Northern Iowa and the North Dakota jobs coming open, Stone, this is not one of those years where there are a lot of high-profile jobs in the FCS open, right? Because guys left to take FBS opportunities. So maybe we're done with the programs everybody knows about, and we might be done, period. This might be all the movement we're going to see, but we will keep you abreast of who gets hired in these jobs that are still open. Well, I thank you all for letting me rant about the Eastern Kentucky and Villanova game. Look, there's something that needs to be remembered when we're talking about this coaching carousel. These are men that have real lives and real families, and it's never something to rejoice about. I wish every one of the gentlemen who has lost their jobs success in the future, and I'm excited for the guys who are going to take their places and try to build these programs back up. It's time for us to take a break. When we come back, it'll be the preview segment where Stone Labanowitz and I will preview the second round games of the FCS playoffs taking place this week. All of that is coming up next, right here on FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Thanks for hanging with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. I'm Kevin, he's Stone. It's time for us to take a quick trip all over FCS Nation and preview the second round games from the FCS playoffs taking place this week. Up first, Tennessee Martin is at number one seed Montana State. Stone Labanowitz, Tennessee Martin can stop the run, and Montana State can run the football. So something she's got to give in this matchup right here. Tennessee Martin giving up less than 100 yards rushing a game. So they don't just stop the run, they take the run away from you. Now people will say, well, they're doing it in a conference that isn't as good as the Big Sky. They're doing it in a conference, I think, Stone, that doesn't have two teams as good as the teams from the Big Sky in it. I don't think the conferences as a whole are all that far off from one another. But Tennessee Martin's defense will be a problem for the Bobcats. I think they're going to have to throw the ball, loosen them up a little bit.
Right. And not only are they going to be asked to throw the football and throw it successfully and even convert on third downs at a consistent rate, I think that they're going to have to go and earn this win. I mean, they're favored by almost three possessions. The line sits at 17 and a half right now. And I think if UT Martin plays the defense that they have all season long, mind you, they haven't played a Montana State, they'll keep this thing close. And Montana State's going to have to go earn it. The weather looks good. I think that bodes well for the game in general. If it was a freezing cold game, it's pretty easy to say that Tommy, with all the quarterback power and quarterback counter and what he's able to do with his legs, this is a runaway. But this is not. UT Martin can play football and they're a complete team. And you get the gist that they want the number one seed. Like, that's just how they play. A defensive-led team wants to see Tommy Mellott, who's up for these awards and whose names rings bells in all of the FCS, the entire landscape. UT Martin wants this. The Skyhawks are ready, and they're going to be led by this defense, and they're going to hold Montana State to less than four touchdowns in this thing, and they're going to make the Bobcats have to win it and have to execute in the fourth quarter. I have this game circled. I think this line's way off.
Well, there's one thing for people who might be inclined to enjoy a little bit extra, if you catch my drift, when watching the game, that producer Sam Cittadini and I will be at this football game, and the Bobcats have never lost in Bozeman when I've been there, so there's that. Number 15, Abilene Christian is at number 2, North Dakota State. This one intrigues me. Abilene Christian wants to throw the ball all over the Fargo Dome, Stone. NDSU has had some problems in their secondary. They just have. Cole Wisniewski, their best player, who hasn't played this season, not a down, I don't believe. Well, he hit the portal. Coach Polisek talked about the guys that they have behind there who played all season, who are getting better, but this is going to be a big test for that secondary. Now, can the Abilene Christian offensive line protect Maverick McIver enough to let him sit back there and do what he needs to do? That is the big question, and that's what remains to be seen for me. If they can protect him and he has time, this could be a scary matchup for North Dakota State. I don't want to put too fine of a point on it. I expect North Dakota State to win the football game, but I think Abilene Christian can come in here if their line can hold up and they can make this thing competitive.
In next segment, I'm going to sit down with Gray Zabel and I'm going to ask him kind of what that message has been. And I get the feeling that it is just one game at a time for these guys. It felt like they were slept on in weeks 1 through 5. They're playing their best football, and they're also coming off of a loss to South Dakota. And I'm in the category of people who think that losing helps teams. I think that's just the case for this. They're coming off a loss. Obviously, had a chance to sit on it, watch that film, and now crack this Abilene film, and they're just going to blow these guys out from start to finish.
Well, Stone, if losing helps the team, well, then, man, over the years, the one that I root for must be the team that's gotten the most help of any team that I'm
Yeah,
aware of.
baby.
But I think maybe what you just said is a whole bunch of bunk. But I do think that it will be a good thing for them to get back out there because you know that how they lost that game to South Dakota has been eating at them boys and had a bye week
Exactly.
last week. They want to get back out there and really, really exercise that and take it out on Abilene Christian. And they just might. That remains to be seen. Number 14 seed Montana is at number 3 seed South Dakota State. This one has a pretty large point spread in it, Stone. And for a couple of reasons, I don't really love the matchup for the Jackrabbits. And I'll tell you why that is. Montana can run the football. Logan Fife can spin it. He can make throws. And we're also seeing a couple of guys catch the ball and another guy run the ball for Montana, who we didn't see a lot of in the regular season because they're freshmen and they use them sparingly. And now that freshmen can play in the playoffs without it hurting them and costing them a red shirt, there were guys who made plays for Montana against Tennessee State on the outside receivers who I was like, who is that guy and where's he been all season? And then you check the roster. Oh, freshman. That's why. There's some new faces. They have some fresh legs. And Montana is going to have to do a couple of things, I think. Run the football and also just throw every gadget you got at South Dakota State. So you have to be conservative on one hand and nuts on the other. And I think that probably fits that Montana football team the way they played this year pretty well. Conservative at times, nuts at times. This matchup will be closer, and this game will be closer than most people think it will, I do believe.
Oh my goodness gracious. I feel the complete opposite of you here. I think South Dakota State pulls out a baseball bat, wraps it in barbed wire, and beats the all living heck out of these guys for four quarters. I mean, this point spread is 22 and a half, and I don't think this matchup bodes any bit well for the Grizzlies. It's the worst third down team in the country. And I think when you look at the crowd and what they do in Brookings, obviously they sell out, but Montana's going to travel really well. That plays into South Dakota State. State. This is a team who's won back-to-back national championships. One of them in January was against the Montana Grizzlies, and this is a way weaker Montana Grizzlies team. There are going to be so many three and outs in this game. So many three and outs in this game the way of Montana, and I think South Dakota State just punishes them and capitalizes on every single mistake, and Bobby's going to try to throw two quarterbacks into the mix. If you don't think Dallas Beanham follows Junior Bergen all over the field, and if you don't think Dustman kicks it 400 yards past Junior Bergen's head and doesn't allow him to dictate or even put a finger on this football game, you're dead wrong. I think South Dakota State is inviting this matchup. They're excited for it, and I think they blow this team out by 25, 28 plus here, Kev.
Well, my grandmama Marsha always said I could talk myself into anything. Number 13, Tarleton State is at number 4, South Dakota. Tarleton State, we mentioned them. Three guys, you got to know who they are and where they are on the field at all times. Quarterback, running back Kayvon Britton, and Cooper, the wide receiver. Three pretty darn good FCS football players coming there to Vermillion to play the Yotes. There's a lot of excitement in that program about them being involved in the playoffs for the first time, and they would like nothing better than to keep this train rolling. We'll see. Tough, tough matchup there for the number 13 seed Tarleton State Texans going to Vermillion to take on the Yotes, the number 4 seed South Dakota.
There are ways to dictate how this game goes from Jump Street. I think you stay away from guys like Maquise Grace, and you stay away from throwing the ball on first down, and you extend these drives. If you're Tarleton State, if you're the Texans, you want long drives. You want to keep Aiden Bauman and them off the field, and you want to tire this Yotes front seven out. And then once all of that starts to happen, then let loose. I haven't mentioned anybody's name as far as skill players go besides Travis Tice and Charles Pierre Jr. Yeah, Carter Bell gets a mention here and there, but his stats don't wow you this season. Tarleton State has these guys outskilled and outmanned, of course, not in the trenches, but they can do damage with that. I'm worried, and I think this line is way off. 16.5 is way too many points for Tarleton State in that offense.
Number 12 seed Illinois State is at number 5 seed UC Davis. Well, you're talking about lines that are way off. I've seen this thing as UC Davis as a 6.5-point favorite. Nothing Illinois State has shown me all season leads me to believe they're going to be able to hang with UC Davis, Stone. Hastings is too good. Lan Larrison can do everything with a football in his hand. There's only one guy in college football who's got more yards than him, and that's that fella from Boise State who might win the Heisman Trophy up there at the FBS level. Yet somehow Larrison can't get invited to the dinner down there the night before the championship game in Frisco, Texas. Yikes. But nothing Illinois State has done has impressed me almost all season. They're, I think, a product of which conference they play in. Every good team they've played, they've gotten their boots bloused. UC Davis had the one hiccup against Montana State and probably a game they should have lost against Portland State. But I don't think this game will be close. I think UC Davis comes in here and wins this thing by multiple touchdowns, mostly because they've got a team, Stone, of guys who've been there a long time, like you said, with Tarleton State. But the quarterback play is solid, the running back play is solid, and their linebackers are hellacious. This is a good Davis football team, and we've been saying that all season.
Yeah, this is hilarious. This line, 6.5, it should be more like 14, 15.5. I'm serious, more than two possessions. I think Lan Larrison with that Miles Hastings combination is just way too much for Illinois State, and I don't think Illinois State has enough on offense to keep up with the pace. When this UC Davis team finds rhythm on offense, they're going to score at will, and they'll get you off the field and score again because they have one of the best defenses in the country. So I don't know where the lines makers or the odds makers are going with this or what they thought, but for us guys who are into the weeds and know what's going on, this one needs to be hammered. I think it's a terrible matchup for the Redbirds and UC Davis at home. This crowd's going to show out. Weather looks good. Miles Hastings, if he goes for over 250, they'll win this game by 2-3 possessions. I'm excited for it.
Number 11 seed Villanova is at number 6 seed Incarnate Word. Wow, my two favorite team that I've yelled about being overrated all season. Well, and in Villanova's case, I mean, to just be completely frank and honest with you, dear listener, I participated in the overrating of them that I've screamed about. So, hey, there's a problem. Look in the mirror, Kevin. You were a huge part of it, dude. So I apologize for that. But they're going on the road, take on Incarnate Word. We know what the Word can do, Stone. They can put up points. They haven't really done it lately, though. They've ran into teams that have good defensive lines and good secondaries, and their point totals have come down the last month of the football season. But judging who has the upper hand here, I'd say Incarnate Word does, because they have Zach Calzada, and I know you'd love to hear me say that, but they also have some skill guys on the outside, and their defense can stop the run and make Connor Watkins beat them throwing the football. I don't believe he can do it.
I think these teams both trade leads back and forth. I think seven's accurate, and it'll land right around there. But I do think late in this third quarter, Villanova is either going to be tied or have a lead in this game. Incarnate Word, when they're good, they're good. But when they're bad, they're really bad. And if Connor Watkins plays clean football, they can easily win this game. And I just am a little worried for Incarnate Word. I think people are bullish on them and have a lot of confidence. And I do think Villanova is going to be up to the task.
Rhode Island is at number 7 seed Mercer. Rhode Island, not impressive last week against Central Connecticut State. Mercer coming off a bye. There's one thing that we need to talk about with Mercer. The defense has been great at times. They've also given up points at times. But Mercer has had every bounce go their way this year, just about, that could go their way this season, except for about a 4.5, 5-minute stretch at Samford. And I look at this football team, and I really need them to start quickly. Rhode Island, they're not going to come in with the most confidence in the world. They didn't do extremely well against Central Connecticut State last week, but they did run the ball effectively. Well, Mercer plays in a league where everybody just about runs the ball effectively in the SOCOM. That shouldn't faze them. I don't think Rhode Island can drop back, throw the ball, and beat Mercer with the secondary and the linebackers they have. Mercer needs to be stout up front, which they have been all season. If they can limit the Rhode Island running game and jump ahead in this thing, could be a long day for the number 10 seed Rhode Island Rams.
Yeah, I agree. I do think this could be a long day for the Rams, but I more so think that it's a classic SoCon victory the way the Bears. I think this is low scoring, and I think Mercer kind of battens the hatches. They've had a week to sit on it and scheme these guys up. Rhode Island doesn't present anything scary offensively, and I think any time that a team like that lines up across Mercer, they're going to dial up pressure early. They're really good at filling gaps in the early downs, first and second, when teams are going to go inside zone or kind of in between the guards. I think Rhode Island has to figure out other ways to score, or else, like you mentioned, they're in for a long day.
Lehigh travels all the way across the country to take on the number 8 seed Idaho Vandals at the Kibby Dome. If you're Idaho, you're thinking, wow, we didn't get Richmond. So you have to think, Stone, when they're doing prep for this game, they had already prepped a little bit for Richmond, wouldn't you think? Very little for Lehigh?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I'm not going to lie.
So Lehigh wins unexpectedly, and nothing they really do on offense scares you if you're Idaho, right? So if you're Idaho, you're feeling pretty good coming to this thing. You got Jack Lane back. He's helped. You're still kind of beat up in the running back room a little bit. A couple of guys need maybe one more week to get back. So what do when you're down a couple of good running backs? Well, you put Jack Lane to work, I think, Stone. And I expect the Idaho Vandals to do that. Making the quick game, as you like to say, be a big part of what they're going to try to do against Lehigh. Don't hand the ball off to guys who aren't all that accustomed to running the football. Get them out of the backfield. Run the 7-yard outs. Make that an extension of your running game. I expect Idaho will do that. They'll sustain drives through that quick game and then hit them with a running play. But I think Idaho doesn't really struggle much against Lehigh. This is a home game in the Kibby Dome against an unseeded team, and I expect Idaho to treat it as such and come out on the winning edge here by several possessions, in my opinion.
Kev, we just about previewed every single game on the slate, but we have an opportunity to dig a little deeper into one of those. Abilene Christian visits North Dakota State. North Dakota State led by an offensive tackle in Gray Zabel. Gray Zabel, oh yeah, he is one of our 12 athletes this season competing to raise money and awareness to stomp out pediatric cancer in partnership, of course, with Northwestern Mutual and Alex's Lemonade Stand. Gray Zabel, this guy's mocked to get drafted in round 1 of the NFL draft. This guy has every single award you could possibly name. Can't wait to sit down with Gray Zabel and Logan Dosh, managing director, Northwestern Mutual Fargo. Hopefully they have a lot to say, and hopefully Gray Zabel gives Bison fans an inside look onto the matchup that they have with Abilene Christian. Kev, let's get on out of here. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Thanks for hanging with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. It's now time for my favorite time of the week, the pick segment. This is where Stone Labanowitz and I go head-to-head, and we'll pick the games from the second round of the FCS playoffs. Up first, UT Martin is at number 1 seed Montana State.
I think Montana State wins this game, but not by much. 28-20, the final here.
Skyhawks' highly regarded run defense will absolutely be put to the test here. They'll be stout for a while, but I believe the passing game from Tommy Mellott will force Tennessee Martin to kind of pick their poison. Do you want them to run the ball or do you want them to throw the ball? And either way they want it, that poison will be fatal. Take number one, Montana State at home over Tennessee Martin, 35-20. Number 15, Abilene Christian is at number two, North Dakota State.
Like I mentioned in the preview segment, I think the Bison just play their ball the way they want to. And you heard Gray Zabel, this team is just taking it one game at a time, which means they won't take these guys lightly. They know what's at stake. They have their eyes set on the prize. Give me the Bison, 38-14.
Abilene Christian quarterback Maverick McIver is going to be back for this game. Will it make a huge difference? I don't really think so. Too much Bison beef up front and not enough guys on the defense for the Wildcats to stop them. Take number two, North Dakota State at home over number 15 seed Abilene Christian, 41-21. Number 14 seed Montana at number three seed South Dakota State.
This thing has South Dakota State written all over it. I'm expecting the Jackrabbits to come out in the first quarter, drop 21 on Montana before Montana can even blink. I think this game finishes 52-17 the way of the Jackrabbits. I think they're just able to, at one point in this game, kind of let loose. You're going to see Wildy score. You're going to see Mark find the pay dirt with his legs. This is going to be a patented Jackrabbit victory, and it's going to remind the country who the hell they are.
I don't disagree with you on the outcome, Stone, but I don't think this is going to be a blowout at all. The Grizz game plan has to be to run the football, eat the clock. But like I said, it also has to be empty the playbook and throw everything you've got at the back-to-back national champions. That's kind of a conundrum there. I understand that I'm not making a whole lot of sense, but you got to use everything you got in this one. The Grizz are running a lot of young guys in there at receiver who we haven't seen, who I mentioned in the recap segment. Fresh legs, guys that don't have a lot of film on, the young running back from Hawaii. I don't like the matchup with South Dakota State. I do think they'll win, but I think this will be a very close game here. Take number three, South Dakota State over number 14 seed Montana, 27-20. Number 13, Tarleton State is at number four, South Dakota.
The finish goes the way of the Yotes. Like I said, I think this is fourth quarter magic from Mr. Bauman. 35-30, the final. I'm just worried that we've been so high on this Yotes defense in this front that Tarleton State can just go score in 3, 4, 5 play drive, 70 plus yards. I think they have that in them, and I think they let it loose. They're playing in a dome in December, kind of rare. You're excited for that opportunity, especially the way they play ball. I think the recipe is just kind of right there and all the ingredients are laid out. Tarleton State keeps this thing close, but Yotes win it, Kev, 35-30.
I also think it's a sneaky good ball game. And like I mentioned, the Texans have three guys you have to account for at all times. Quarterback Victor Gabalis, running back Kavion Britton, and wide receiver Darius Cooper. Yotes defense will be able, I believe, to get pressure on the quarterback without having to blitz a whole bunch. Defensive line is very good for the Yotes. We've said that all season. And the linebackers and secondary are also very good. Would love to see some alacrity on offense from the Yotes as well. I believe we'll see all those things and a whole lot more. Yotes get it done here at home. Number four, USD wins over Tarleton State, 38-16. Number 12 seed, Illinois State, is at number five seed, UC Davis.
Yeah, we both love UC Davis here, and I think it has the ability to be wayward and lopsided, similar to the Jacks in Montana as far as my prediction goes. I'm copying and pasting this one, 52, but I don't think Illinois State can score 17. I'm going to keep them at 10 points here. 52-10, the final here. UC Davis lays it on the Redbirds. Folks, 6.5, are you kidding me? Hammer it.
You've mentioned the spread there. For some reason, the books think this game will be the closest of the weekend. And y'all, I'm like Stone here. I don't see it. Haven't been impressed with the Redbirds all season very often. And look, I'm trying to not let my bulldog mouth overload my hummingbird ass here, but I don't think this one is close at all. Take number five, UC Davis at home over number 12, Illinois State, 42-10. Number 11, Villanova is at number six, Incarnate Word.
Game confuses me. I really don't know what to expect, but I do think Zach Calzada and Connor Watkins find a way to score a lot of points. And Cardinal Word wins this thing, Kev, 42-35. This could go either way. This is a coin flip. I like the 7-point spread with Incarnate Word. I think they find a way to just kind of hit it right on the number here. This is all touchdowns here between these two squads.
This one just confounds me. My two favorite teams that I've screamed about being completely overrated all season match up here. Yay! Well, I'll say one good thing is going to come from this football game. We'll finally quit asking questions about Villanova and when they'll put it all together on offense. So there's that. We got that going for us, right? Take number 6, Incarnate Word, at home over number 11, Villanova, 30-20. Number 10, Rhode Island, is at number 7, Mercer.
I talked about a patented SoCon victory. I think it's just that for the Mercer Bears. 23-13. They played really good defense, cause a few turnovers here that just keep Rhode Island at arm's distance, and they'll do just enough. They'll start running this ball late in that third, fourth quarter, and some of them will pop, and they'll put one more on the board here. 23-13, the final. Mercer gets out of here with a safe victory.
God help me if Rhode Island wins, y'all. But all the smack that I've talked and the much of a SoCon homer as I am, God help me if the Bears don't win this one. But I don't really like the matchup for Mercer. I don't like it a lot. I think they'll win the football game, mostly because the Bears defense and that front four are too good not to get home enough and to do enough to make Rhode Island throw the football. They'll be able to do a lot of things to this Rhode Island team without having to blitz. And when they do blitz, they'll get home, cause havoc. They'll create some turnovers. Take number 7, Mercer, over number 10, Rhode Island in Macon, Georgia. Bears win 31-21. Lehigh is at number 8 seed, Idaho.
Kev, I truly don't think that Idaho shows much here. They know who's on deck. It's anticipated. We already thought this was going to be a Richmond team, so it's not like they've schemed these guys up all that much. Although they are focused, this Idaho team's going to be in front of a sold-out Kibby Dome crowd. I think they play good football and win this thing 35-17.
I don't think there's a whole bunch to see here, FCS Nation. I'd love it if Lehigh proved me wrong. It'd be a great story if they did. Take number 8, Idaho, to win at home over Lehigh in the Kibby Dome. Vandals win 41-13.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Thanks for sticking with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Guys, you know what time it is. Honorary Captains of the Week, they join me once a show, and this one I'm super excited about. Probably the most anticipated of the year. You can call it saving the best for last because we left all the Dakotas. And first up is Gray Zabel, offensive tackle for the Bison. You hear the name, it rings bells, just based off of the body of work that he's put together in his time in Fargo. And alongside him, honorary captain of the week number 2, Logan Dosh, managing director of Northwestern Mutual Fargo. Logan, I'll start with you. I appreciate you giving the show some time this week.
You bet. Thanks for having us.
And Gray, to you as well. I know you're super, super, super busy. You're actually on this call right now from the facility. So thank you for giving the show some time this week as well.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
I typically call this my favorite segment of the week. Guys, it's just so much fun to get a chance to learn who these FCS athletes are underneath the helmet and behind the face mask. I think the subdivision isn't covered as much as it should be compared to the FBS. And this is a good platform, a good opportunity for not only Bison fans, but FCS Nation in general to get a chance to learn who Gray is and what he stands for, what he believes in, kind of what he's gone through to get to this point in his life, and has a bright, bright future ahead of him, which we'll touch on that. But our challenge, guys, you know what we do. We have these athletes compete against each other to raise as much money and awareness as they possibly can. Last year was 11 athletes. This year, 12 athletes, 12 universities. As we stand right now in the first week of December, we've raised over $53,000. That is the athletes doing what they do best and getting the word out and using their name, image, and likeness to point people in the right direction and make sure that they're giving to causes like what Alex Eliminate Stand and the Foundation stands for. And that's pediatric cancer, and that's families and children who can't do anything about it. In the first year, Aiden Bauman raised a little over $9,000-$10,000, and he won the Lemon Trophy. Gray currently sits at $2,000, and our goal a lot higher than that. And we're not done yet. Round one of the FCS playoffs has come and go, and we are into round two. Logan, I'd like to start with this question. Why Gray? Why did you guys go after Gray? Why do you guys feel like he's a good representative of what you do?
Yeah, so anytime we're looking for the candidate to get involved, you know, number one, we're looking for somebody that has, you know, all the characteristics that we really want to embody here as a company, Northwestern Mutual. A lot of integrity, a lot of character, doing the right things. And I think he's shown over his time not only to be successful, which I think is equally as important, but also to be able to represent not only us, but what the organization stands for. with his body of work, alongside his talent, somebody that is easy to, as many have hitched their wagon to, and really represent not only Northwestern Mutual but our Fargo community, for this cause.
Yeah, and Gray, when you were approached by Logan and the rest of the crew, take us through your initial thoughts, kind of what you thought about it when you went home and did some research and why you felt like this was a no-brainer.
Yeah, when I got approached by Logan and Dinger from Northwestern Mutual, I immediately thought this was something I want to get behind. Anything I could do to help out with kind of the fight for childhood cancer. And I know last year there was about 13 guys that had an awesome challenge and they raised a ton of money for Alex's Lemonade. And one of my teammates, Eli Mostart, was a part of that. So this year I was super excited that they kind of picked me to do this. And it was an immediate yes for me, no questions asked.
And did you think when you signed your national letter of intent to play for the Bison or when you ended up on campus in Fargo that something like this would come about? Obviously, your sights are set on playing Sunday football, being the best person and developing character, all of those things. But did you think an opportunity like literally having a hand in the fight against childhood cancer and putting a stop and saving somebody's life per se? We don't know how far this money goes and the effect that it could have on a family. Did you think something like this was possible or no? Was it just school and football?
To be honest, no, but I'm very grateful that it did happen. Just the opportunity to help somebody out through tough times is kind of what we stand for up here at North Dakota State. Anything we can do to make somebody's life a little bit easier so they can enjoy some time with family and all that. So no, I didn't think so, but unbelievably grateful that we've gotten to this point in my career where I could do something like this to help people.
Logan, my favorite thing to talk about with you guys, and whether it's a managing director, a partner, anybody in the recruiting space for you guys, this is a question that your eyes typically light up and you guys tackle. Why are athletes so key for having them at the forefront of this thing? And why are they so key for Northwestern Mutual? There's stats that get thrown at me every week from you guys that every 1 in 4, whether it's an intern or advisor, played collegiate sports. Kind of why are athletes so important and why does it work so well?
Yeah, I think when you look at what we look for, once again, as an organization, whether it's someone like Gray to help represent us, or whether it's someone in the internship program as a college financial representative, whether it's a full-time advisor, is any organization is going to look for just those common denominators that they feel like will fit well from, a culture perspective. And a lot of the things that college athletes are naturally blessed with and continue to develop are things that we look for all the time. And I think probably a lot of employers look for, but we specifically want to, put an emphasis on those really important characteristics, the hard work, the discipline, accountability, right? At the end of the day, that really we're going to show up, we're going to do what we need to do, we're going to do it the right way, and then be able to do that over and over and over again, which myself, Derek Dinger, amongst many others, were, former college athletes. And so within that, we feel like we can gravitate towards that and make those connections for those individuals to say, hey, here's what you're doing now. And, if we're lucky enough, down the road after Gray has an awesome NFL career, you never know what could come full circle. But at the end of the day, it's a lot easier to relate those things of what our day-to-day looks like because it's similar in a lot of ways to what they've been going through, or in Gray's situation, what he's been doing for the last four plus years of showing up every day, doing the hard work, having a process-based system, and being able to ultimately go and attribute to a team that's around them.
Poetry, poetry. Having a chat here, Managing Director of Northwestern Mutual Fargo, Mr. Logan Dosh, and of course, the Honorary Captain of the Week, number one, Gray Zabel, OT for the Bison. Gray, what's this mean to you? This partnership, this whole thing that we're doing? Have you had somebody in your direct family, your circle of friends, been affected by this damn disease?
Yeah, this means the world to kind of give back and try and raise some money for a great cause. I know my grandma had cancer. One of my best buddies growing up, their older brother had cancer in high school. So just anything that I can do to kind of do my part to help out in this fight, I want to do it, and I want to try and do it the best that I can.
And Logan, I ask you the same thing. Kind of what's this mean to you? And as you and Derek Dinger kind of tackle this thing together, why do you feel the need to step in? Why do you feel the need to be involved? What is it that drags you in?
Yeah, I think number one, obviously the personal things. My mother had cancer, my grandmother had cancer. Both unfortunately did not end the way we wanted them to, but that doesn't necessarily stop anybody from hopefully providing what we consider, kind of a bright light during a dark time. And I think majority of people deal with some type of sickness, whether that's a friend, a family member, whatever the case might be. And I think a lot of times, when people want to help, it's always in good intentions, but sometimes the best help can come at the darkest times. And so if we can do anything to give our time, effort, and energy to those individuals, I think it can be valuable. And really from a cultural standpoint, we always believe in our office here of a give to get mentality. And we feel like if we can continue to give to others, that those things will come full circle. Whether it's through meeting people like Greg, getting him involved, whether it's through internship programs or continuing to grow our footprint here in Fargo. Hopefully these things can shine a bright light and really create a cooperation within the community. And hopefully Northwestern Mutual seeing a good light for what we're able to do to give away. And if we're lucky enough to also work with people at some point in the future, hopefully that's just a positive reflection of our organization and what we're ultimately trying to accomplish.
Logan, you're spitting right now. You're spitting right now. Philanthropic leadership, something that I love touching on with you guys as well. You talked about, you know, if there's anything that you can help Gray do. Obviously he's on the path to the National Football League and is very busy with his schedule and things right now. But for the few times that you guys rub elbows and meet and go to these events together, what are things from a philanthropic leadership standpoint that you can kind of pass along to Gray, and kind of why is that something that we want to accomplish together in this partnership?
Yeah, I think that a lot goes into that. You know, the first thing is we're going to be his number one fan. We're going to be there to support him if there ever were anything to come up that we could be helpful for him as his journey continues in whatever way that is. I think everybody has a pretty good idea of what that might look like here in the next few months, which is super exciting. And then in addition to that, I think Gray's worked really hard to get to where he is. And I think sometimes in the fame that he's been able to acquire through his hard work, maybe sometimes that's forgotten. And on top of that, I think his character shines a lot brighter than even his ability on the field. And so there probably at some point will be a day when maybe he can't play football. And so if we can be any part of whatever that next step is, you know, following football, that would be an awesome thing for us. But more than anything, it's hopefully getting him into a position in a spotlight that people can also see not only the work that he's put together on his football career, but also the person that he is. And him willingness, you know, when I called him and asked him, he was super excited to partner with us. And it was during a time during fall camp where he was super busy, but got us a phone call back. And I think, once again, just a testament to his character, because he doesn't need to be doing this, but he chose to, and to give back to the community and many people around it.
Yeah, and that internship program, you threw something in there that triggered this for me, was pick up that phone. That's something that I throw at these athletes a lot of the times. And Gray, I want to ask Logan first, but I want to give you the opportunity to speak to younger athletes. But Logan, it's your guys' bread and butter, the internship program. Talked about the numbers and how many were former athletes, and we even had guys on our list last year in our first year round, Brian Williams and Quentin Hicks, two defensive linemen for South Dakota State that were actual interns and a part of that internship program that now work full time where they came from before they attended South Dakota State. Why is it your guys' bread and butter, and why is it important that you guys have athletes in the mix, and just what does it mean to your office?
Yeah, I think number one, you know, especially in the college spotlight, I mean, you come to Fargo and NDSU is the show, right? Whether it's basketball, whether it's football, the college athletes, because of their hard work and what they do for the community, you know, from little kids all the way up to people that are living their life every day in retirement or whatever the case might be, you know, on Saturday afternoons, they're going to the Fargo Dome. They're going to watch Gray and his teammates try to win some football games. When it's a Friday or Saturday evening, they're headed to the Shack to watch the basketball team and see what they can get done, whether it's men's or women's. And so because of the spotlight that they're in, along with their natural talents and abilities, I think it just is a great cooperation of those two things to help them see a potential in their future through our internship program. And really, just to speak to that a little bit further, one thing I always tell our interns that when they come in, whether they're college athletes or whether they're not, is there's no such thing as a bad internship, in the sense of you're going to find something that you really like and potentially find a long-term career, or you're going to find something that maybe isn't for you. And I don't think either of those answers are bad, but it's more the exposure to the world, to the real world, and what's next. And I think one of the things we always encourage people is if they come into our internship program, you know, and they, you know, they become, you know, positive influences and they're doing their best here, we're always going to be their stepping stone if it's not the right fit. So we can help get them connected to other people in the community. We can get them connected to other areas that might be a better fit for them in the future. So once again, there's no such thing as a bad internship, in my opinion, unless for some reason the culture or whatever isn't the right fit, which sure, we don't feel like hopefully isn't an issue for people. But it isn't always, you know, the final step. It's just a step, you know, in anyone's journey.
And Gray, what would your advice be to younger athletes who aren't as blessed and maybe don't work as hard as you, or maybe that are just students that, you know, aren't going to be paid to play the game, but who should take an internship, who should pick up the phone, kind of how important it is, and what have you gathered from Logan and Derek Dinger and everybody else from their office that they may be a good look?
Yeah, really good question. I think the big thing that I want to preach is just kind of the ability to connect with other people and to kind of be able to find out like what your path is in life, if that's through sports, if that's through helping people, if that's through finding something that you love and you're truly passionate about and just kind of going down that path to the best of your ability. And then kind of a motto that we live by up here is anything worth doing is worth overdoing. And that's just kind of thing that we kind of preach, especially in everyday life, is if it's something of shoveling somebody's sidewalk or going to weights extra early or getting extra treatment in, if it's worth doing, you might as well do it to your best ability and go kind of that 110% mentality, because this world is crazy and everything comes full circle, I feel like. And I love how Logan said that it comes back and pays back tenfold. If you do it, the final results can be awesome.
Very well said. Again, having a chat here, Logan Dosh, managing director, Northwestern Mutual Fargo, and offensive tackle for the North Dakota State Bison, Gray Zabel. Let's talk a little bit of ball here. As are 10-2, dropped 1-2 Colorado and 1-2 South Dakota. Gray, grade the season out, A through F, where things stand right now as we approach round two.
I would have to go with a B+.
And what would be missing for that to be an A+?
Yeah, we've kind of been a little up and down throughout the season. Had kind of had a few hardships. We lost the heartbreaker in Colorado. That if we were able to run the ball in the third quarter, I think that'd be a different ball game. We just kind of stalled out there, but we learned from that. And then we kind of had to have a comeback win down at ETSU. That was a little scary. But throughout the season, we kind of developed and kind of learned more about our team and what kind of drives us and our abilities and kind of the motivating factors for all of us. And then just to end the regular season with a heartbreaker down at USD, and their team is unbelievable, play really physical and stuff, but I think we learned a lot with those two losses and those 10 wins, and I think it's really going to help us here in the playoffs.
Great. Am I crazy, and I said this on our show last week, I'm going to say it again depending on what you say, am I crazy to say that North Dakota State gets scarier because they lost to that Coyote squad? Is that proper math?
Yeah, I think some could say that. I think others, and I know our coaches start saying, like, guys, we're a very beatable team if we don't do the right things, if we don't play with the right fundamentals, the right mentality, the right mindset. But at the same time, we all kind of understand now that, hey, if we don't show up ready to play every single down, we are going to get beat. And it doesn't matter how much time's left in the game. As long as there's still a second left in the game, anything can happen. So you never know the final outcome until it says zeros up on that scoreboard. And it's one of those deals where we're going to learn from it and we're going to get better. And I'm excited to get back out there this Saturday.
Yeah, and what's been that message this week in practice? Obviously, a little more walkthrough. Obviously, you guys, you know, don't want to be banged up heading into an Abilene Christian. But as far as head coach Timmy P, what are some of the things that he's preaching on you guys, and one or two maybe that stuck with you that you can spit to the audience right now?
Yeah, I would say just our mindset of going 1-0 every single day, every single thing you do. Just go 1-0. It doesn't matter if it's by 1 point or by 100 points. Going 1-0 is all that matters in the playoffs, because it is a one game season every single week. And I think just learning that and kind of embracing that, you start kind of having that kind of little pressure on the back of your neck, knowing that you are beatable. And if you lose a game now, you're done with college football. So just kind of having that mentality of doing whatever it takes to go out and get a win and go 1-0 is kind of something that really drives us.
And now giving the opportunity to kind of excite Bison fans right now, you've cracked the Abilene Christian tape. What are some areas you look to exploit as a team, or just kind of what's popped out to you on tape about this Abilene Christian team?
Yeah, they're a really talented ball club. It is really cool to kind of see their transition from being a powerhouse of an offense to now kind of having that defense start developing a little bit. And their front four are really athletic and play really physical, so that's going to be really cool to go up against. And I think their starting quarterback's going to come back now, and he's a gunslinger. He can throw the rock around the yard. He's pretty impressive. Love watching him play on tape. But it'll be a really, really good game this weekend, and I'm looking forward to it. And they got a lot of really good ball players.
Gray, how big is this month and hopefully January for not your football career, but literally your life? Obviously, it's a blessing to be able to play for the Bison and contend for national champions. But I could go down the laundry list of seniors that you guys have. But for guys like you and Cam, kind of what's this mean? Have you guys had conversations internally, whether it's at the apartment, at dinner, whatever it is, a morning lift, like let's go out with a bang, like let's do this thing. Has that conversation been had, or is it literally let's go 1-0 every week?
It's kind of go 1-0 know every single week. We haven't really looked that far. We're just trying to be the best that we can be every single day and trying to develop the guys underneath us, because your legacy at NDSU isn't what you do here. It's where you leave it, and kind of always leave it better than you found it. So just kind of trying to develop the players that we have on our team, knowing that this is kind of the final days of this football season, and trying to put it in the best positive trajectory possible.
I love it. And I don't want to go any further than where I am about to go with your foreseeable future. But when you think about Alex's Lemonade Stand and Northwestern Mutual and the whole deal for you, and now being on this platform, speaking to tens of thousands of people that are listening right now, do you see this helping you when you sit down in front of NFL GMs, NFL head coaches, being a part of something like this? Has this helped you kind of grow up a little faster, because your life's going to require that right now? Are you going to lean on this and relationships you've made, whether it's Logan or Derek in the recent weeks or months? Are you going to lean on this? Is this going to help you in your future?
Absolutely. Being able to tell somebody that you've been a part of something like this, and as special as this is, because the type of talent that is involved with Alex Lemonade, I think there's 13 guys across FCS right now that are currently in a race to see who can donate as much money. So just being associated with them as well is huge for the future, if that's through football or in life, or just being able to kind of network and be around the Logan and Derek's throughout the time here is pretty special. But yeah, it's going to be awesome to be able to have this, kind of be able to use it in the future, and be able to generate some positive momentum from it.
And like Logan said, when you're done playing ball, you have a home. You guys Logan, after hearing Gray literally just preach the gospel right there, and I talked about it at the very beginning, you're going to get a chance to learn who Gray is and kind of what he stands for. I think he just did this just that beautifully. But if I were to hand you a microphone and a stage full of Bison fans right now, and you were tasked with getting them to donate money, what would be some of the things that you would say, and how would you speak about Gray if I were to hand you the mic?
Yeah, well, the first thing is I got to give Gray his props, because we're both plucked out of South Dakota, born and raised, to move up here to Fargo, right? So that's got to get him some points from the beginning. In all seriousness, you know, I think, once again, it's going back to the cooperation. There's a reason why we chose Gray. We didn't just go down a list of people and say, hey, hopefully this works. You know, we're fortunate to have some relationships with the coaches on staff. And once again, I've known who Gray is for a long time, just from him growing up in South Dakota and then moving here. And so we wanted to, number one, pick someone that we feel like we had a lot in common with from a representation standpoint. And, you know, I think as far as the cooperation goes for Alex's Lemonade Stand, I think anybody can get behind an organization and a person that is going to do good things. And there's a lot of other causes in the world that we could probably get behind. This just happened to be the ones that Northwestern Mutual really has bought into since 2012. You know, before my time, even with NM. And so I think anytime you can have an awesome representation of an individual like Gray, and if you can, you know, copy that with a really awesome organization that does a lot of good things, hopefully it's a recipe for success. And it definitely has been. You know, like you said earlier, we're not done yet. Hopefully we can continue to generate some more impact here before the season ends. But I think, you know, those few combinations of good things, good people with a good organization that are trying to do good, it's really hard to miss that.
Yeah, and Gray, Logan passes you the mic in front of a bunch of Bison fans, and you need them to donate. Kind of what are some of the things that you're telling them?
Yeah, just Northwestern Mutual in general is just an unbelievable company. They got a lot of awesome people in there, and they're the type of people that they're going to give their shirt off their back for you if you need it. Just speaking from the heart here, that they've kind of been the mentors for the NDSU football team, because I know guys before me have had multiple internships with them, and they've spoke only but great things. And I was super excited. I had the opportunity to get an internship there, but it came about a week too late, as I already accepted a different one. But I was kind of kicking myself that I wasn't able to work there, because I wanted to be a part of that awesome team and kind of that we before me mentality that they have there, and the unbelievable staff. And it's a unique crew that they got down there with a lot of different characters, but they're just unbelievable people, and can't say anything bad about them.
I love it, guys. And it's just super easy to donate to whether it's the Dinger Network office or any athlete on our list, but for Gray specifically, FCSNationRadio.com on the right-hand side of the screen. Alex's Lemonade Stand has its own wing of the website. Click on it. Donate, pledge, or if you just want to check the standings right there, and you'll see the list of names, and smack dab in the middle, Gray Zabel, NDSU Dinger Network office. click that name and you can donate. There's a dollar, there's $5, $10, or you can participate in the Lemon Top Challenge.
So Lemon Top Challenge is easy. Lemon on your head, take a picture, Alex Lemonade stand, and go Bison, and a donation can be made.
Yeah, so if you don't want to take money out of your wallet, Northwestern Mutual, the foundation, and Alex Lemonade stand, they will do it for you. $10 for every Lemon Top Challenge. Told you guys how to donate. Gray told you guys why. Logan told you guys why. I appreciate you guys' time so much. Logan, I'll start with you. Any parting words for Gray as he takes the field against Abilene Christian here Saturday, 2 p.m. kick?
No, we're excited for him. Obviously, hoping for the result that Gray wants, which is a win and a healthy win. Everybody's saying put together. And I know Fargo's excited, as usual, to be running in the playoffs again here. So we look forward to watching that and their success of the work that they put in. And obviously, specifically for Gray and what he's going to accomplish starting this weekend and continuing moving forward. So
Logan, let me get a score prediction.
That's really under pressure there. Let's see. I'm going to go 31-14 win at home.
Okay. Keeping it quiet. 31 is just ground and pound. You guys are running that thing out onto the next round. I love it. 31-14. I'll copy paste that on the show this week, Logan.
Let's
I'll take
it.
That. I'll take that. Gray, super busy schedule. You're literally calling us from inside the facility right now. Good luck this Saturday. And seriously, thank you so much for giving the show some time this week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on to talk about an unbelievable cause that we're doing. And I'm super excited to kind of see the future of FCS radio and all that. So you guys got a fan out of me and looking forward to your guys' future.
That brings us to the end of another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. FCS Nation is co-hosted by Mr. Stone Lebanowitz, produced by Mr. Sam Cittadini. I'm executive producer and host Kevin Marshall, thanking you for making FCS Nation a small part of your football week. And like always, do y'all would like to remind you that life's a lot like football. You play by the rules and the penalties won't kill you. Until next week, so long, everybody.